all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, December 8th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, along with Aaron Zommers here. Joe Zepecki will join us as well with a little wrap on the midterms now that the Georgia election is in our rearview mirror. And Kristen Lyerly returns at the bottom of the hour, along with Natalie Baumstad from Wello, a group dedicated to helping everybody improve their health in Brown County, part of a new segment we're going to call Hometown Health. If you'd like to reach us, 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Remember, you can follow us all day long on your favorite social media channel. Just look for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. And of course, our website, upnorthnewswi.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Waukesha County Circuit Judge Jennifer Durrell, one of two conservative candidates for state Supreme Court, is under scrutiny now for giving a man 2 days to report to jail last week. A man who instead went to Illinois and attacked his wife's parents, firing a gun into their home and stabbing them. The in-laws, both in their late 60s, are expected to survive. Now, before anybody rushes to connect some of the dots, we want to make clear, Judge Durrell was not part of the right-wing crowd hammering Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes on the issue of eliminating cash bail. This isn't about her being hypocritical on a position. But the right-wing crowd that hammered Lieutenant Governor Barnes better understand that any defense you make of Durrell is only going to make you look worse. And you have to decide whether to be hypocritical and continue to back Durrell in the February primary, or abandon her and show yourself to still not be serious about fixing our broken criminal justice system. Here are the facts as spelled out in media reports about Judge Durrell, who gained notoriety for her handling of a trial for the man who ran over and killed several people at last year's Waukesha Christmas parade. On Wednesday of last week, the very same day she publicly announced her candidacy for state Supreme Court, Judge Durrell sentenced Michael Liu, 36, on misdemeanor charges related to domestic violence over the summer, where he basically lost it in front of his wife and kids while one kid was crying. He threw an object. He grabbed a hammer and smashed one of the kids' iPads, punched his wife in the shoulder, forced open the door of a room where she'd fled with the kids, later said he was joking when asked why he said something about killing one of the kids and himself. Durrell sentenced him to 4 months in jail, which, according to a conservative website, was actually more than what prosecutors asked for. While his wife said Liu had been violent for the past few months in multiple incidents, he had no prior criminal record of any kind and was in a treatment program and already out on bail. So Durrell allowed him 2 days to report to jail on his own and get his affairs in order. Instead, Liu went to his in-laws, tried to kill them, and is now facing Illinois charges and recovering from his own injuries because during the attack, the father-in-law was able to stab him 17 times. Durrell herself has said that the current cash bail system is not a best practice. Many Republicans agree, the ones interested in actual reform, not scoring political points while doing nothing about a problem. She would certainly face questions about that in the Supreme Court primary, especially since the Waukesha parade suspect himself was out on what was described as low bail when the incident occurred. In a just world, what would happen is that all those who condemned Mandela Barnes and are prepared to do the same to Judge Durrell would come to their senses and understand the importance of making real change to the system so that the people who are held in custody pending trial are there for being at the risk of harming others, whether they're rich or poor, whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor, and the people who aren't at risk of harming others don't get locked up indefinitely for long periods awaiting a trial, but are locked up for something like a bad check or some other reason completely unrelated to public safety. These are people who lose their jobs while they wait, or their homes, or their families. This is a system that needs repair. Judge Durrell actually knows that. And Mandela Barnes knows that. And plenty of other criminal justice advocates know that. but not the billionaires who slimed Mandela Barnes during the recent campaign. It's always easier to say that Barnes and Governor Tony Evers are literally opening the prison gates and telling convicted murderers, have a nice day, try not to kill anyone. Maybe we should stick to the actual issues, not the hyperbole and the hypocrisy, if we want real change that improves public safety. I'm not giving Judge Durrell a pass on this. I still think this could turn out to be a really short state Supreme Court race once she examines the political landscape. The only way that this self-described conservative, trained at a law school founded by TV preacher Pat Robertson, can remain credible in this race is to become the conservative candidate who speaks out about the need for criminal justice reform, including reforming, if not eliminating, the cash bail system, because that shouldn't be a partisan issue. On the other hand, if she tries to downplay this, if she makes excuses, if she comes back to the usual right-wing routine, the whole lock them up shtick, law and order, well, she's going to be toast, and she deserves it. No matter how many billions are spent against her, they won't be able to change the circumstances of a case that Dan Kelly is quite likely to use in the primary against her, and that has other right-wing folks around Wisconsin tied up in knots, wondering what this case means in terms of the person they want to support. Perhaps they want to support the person who takes these issues seriously and wants to fix things and not just win elections because of them. We'll be back with Joe Sopecki to talk about the midterm landscape right after this break. This is Up North News Radio. Back now on Up North News Radio with our friend Joe Sopecki, who is with us throughout the campaign year to talk about various week-to-week events as they transpired. And now we want to take some time, now that we're post-Georgia, post-November, post-hangover, to talk about the year that was. And then, of course, look ahead, because the work never ends around here. Joe, how are you?
Good. The year that was, and what a year it was. We are finally done with the 2022 midterm election cycle. It is over, done, and dusted.
And the Democrats have 51 senators instead of 50. I mean, historically, it's an anomaly to begin with. But what does it really mean to have 51 Democratic senators instead of 50, especially when you still have Manchin and Sinema in there?
Well, it makes an enormous difference on a couple of issues. So for the last 2 years, the United States Senate has been under a power sharing agreement, which means that on every committee, there have been an equal number of Republicans and Democrats. That's made the committee work much more difficult, not impossible. President Biden has done an amazing job seating judges throughout the federal judiciary, but with a 51-49, now there will be a one-seat advantage on all of the committees in the United States Senate. That will mean that potential judges that the president nominates, can get through the committee process and to the floor even more quickly. That's fantastic. It also means that the U.S. Senate committees will have subpoena power, which can help with investigations, particularly as the House will now be under Republican control. We don't yet know who the speaker is, but there's more Republicans than Democrats. And we know that the Republican plan to fight inflation is to investigate Hunter Biden.
There it is. So, I knew it was there someplace.
So the fact that the Senate Democrats will have investigative power because of a 51-49 breakdown means that they can serve as sort of a stopgap against overreach by the House investigation arms and committees. So it does make a big difference. And just to put a button on it, truly, utterly astonishing how well Democrats did. The only president to not lose a single senator of his own party in American history, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1934. That was a long time ago. So, you know, we've seen that. We see, I think it was JFK was the last time some of the numbers in the elections went this way. So listen, JFK and FDR is pretty good company for President Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. to find himself in. That makes for a good year, a great election cycle. Obviously, we would have liked to see some additional pickups, including right here in Wisconsin. But all in, a really great year for Democrats and a really bad year for MAGA Republicans, Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
And yet the Republicans, when they take the House and once they decide leadership, you know, will behave as if they have a national mandate to do all of these investigations. And Ron Johnson's already said that although he's in the minority, he's going to, you know, work hand in hand with the House Republicans on all of these investigations. So Ron Johnson notwithstanding, do we think that any of the members of the Wisconsin House delegation are especially going to be trying to use one of those investigations as their, you know, moment to emerge on the national scene, or are they all going to be wallflowers in the coming years?
Well, we don't have a lot of seniority among House Republicans from Wisconsin. These are almost entirely backbenchers. So I'm not expecting much out of them aside from the usual nonsense. But I think the big picture takeaway is you and I know the age-old saying, nothing was ever learned from the second kick from a mule. I'm not sure Republicans, now that they've gotten kicked by the mule, what, three, four election years in a row, have yet learned the lesson, which is that the voters, we the people, are not interested in this MAGA extremism, election denialism way of doing things, where all the Republican Party stands for is trying to feed the outrage meter. People don't want that. They want solutions. They want leadership that understands what's going on in their life and does something to address it. You know, it's easy to sort of say this ad, that issue. But when you look at what President Biden and Democrats were able to accomplish, be it the bipartisan infrastructure bill, be it the first gun legislation in almost three decades, be it the Inflation Reduction Act, which will lower healthcare costs starting next year for hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites, and promote climate jobs, the biggest climate bill in American history. And we haven't even talked about the American Rescue Plan that got shots in arms. That those are all enormous legislative achievements that you can have particular quibbles with this policy or that policy, but President Biden was able to get things done. And we know that's what voters want to see. If we didn't learn anything from the Walker years, it was that people responded to people feeling like politicians had accomplished something, even if they didn't agree with all of the particulars. We're on a bit of a heater, as I think the gambling term, when it comes to the amount of wins that President Biden has been able to stack on top of one another.
And yet, whether this will cause Republicans at the national level to do any kind of introspection, self-reflection, anything like that, is doubtful at best, I would assume, because especially here, I mean, Trumpism existed before Trump here in Wisconsin, starting with Scott Walker's, you know, election in 2010. It continues to this day with so many Tony Evers nominees having still not been confirmed. But I'll ask the question anyway, is there any reason to think that there will be a slightly different chastened Republican Party in Madison and or Washington next year?
I have a hard time believing that this will emanate from Wisconsin. You know, there was a time when Wisconsin Republicans were leading figures on the national stage and were sort of setting the blueprint and had that ability. Those days are done. They just are. This is a fully Trumpified Republican Party. You see it in the special election down in southeastern Wisconsin that's coming up, where you've got Janelle Branchen, the Trumpiest member of the Wisconsin legislature, running against one of her opponents, newly announced, Van Mobley, the first elected official. He's, I think, a Thiensville Village board member. First elected official in the country to endorse Trump in 2016, has not backed away from him in 6 years, even after all of the nonsense that we've seen. So from the Wisconsin Republican perspective, I have a hard time believing that they are going to lead the charge to move their party beyond Trump. Nationally, I think you will hear a lot of lip service from responsible Republicans about moving on, but I'm not sure you're going to see any actual there. Kevin McCarthy can't do it if he wants to lead House Republicans and be the speaker when you've got such a narrow majority, the Matt Gaetzes, Marjorie Taylor Greens, and Derek Van Ordens of the world are going to have an outsized power and ability to basically veto anything reasonable or responsible that the Republican House wants to do. And so we've got some scary times ahead of us on things like the debt ceiling, which can really impact the economy. So I think you're going to hear a lot of noise about moving on from Trump. What you need to look for is the signal. And I have no confidence that the Republican Party of Wisconsin or nationally is prepared to do what needs to be done to excise Donald Trump from our politics.
So that takes us to the state level. A new legislature has to adopt a budget, has a $6 billion surplus to work with. There's an infinite amount of possible options to make something a win-win. But I don't know what Republicans would accept in order to risk being called a rhino. And I don't know what Democrats would have to accept that doesn't rise to the level of a poison pill by the Republicans. But again, I have to ask, because you're the person here, is there a way to get a win-win out of all this? Or are we going to end up, you know, a year from now saying, wow, it's now a $10 billion surplus and they're still fighting over it?
Yeah, I don't see them coming to no deal. You have to get a state budget done. And so they will. You will see more money for schools. And beyond that, I think that's where the fight and the negotiation is going to lie. But here's what we know. We know that Tony Evers has a backbone like a ramrod. He is not going to be, you know, run over by the Republican leaders, Devin LeMahieu and Robin Voss. It's just not going to happen. So he's going to have a strong backbone. He's going to make sure that there's some give and take. And listen, that's what legislating takes. Democrats aren't going to get everything we want, but neither are Republicans. I think at the end of the day, you will see some combination of more funding for schools, with the vast, vast majority of that going to K-12 public schools. I think you will see some tax relief for middle class and working class families in Wisconsin. Beyond that, I'm not sure. There's also nothing that says you have to spend down the entire $6 billion surplus. You know, if you want to carry over $1 billion or $2 billion, put some more money into the rainy day fund, I think there's an argument to be made that that would be really responsible governance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there will be another recession someday. I mean, it's just math. So you think that in the end, Evers and the current leadership have to and can get something done? We don't have to, like, go looking for a gang of four someplace to kind of broker a deal from the middle?
I don't think so. I think the fact that Senator LeMahieu, Speaker Voss, and Governor Evers are talking again, I think there's a little bit of a reset. I think sometimes that language can get overblown. But listen, the fact that the Republican legislature now sees, listen, we got four more years with Governor Evers, they're going to have to come to the table. And listen, again, they're not going to get everything they want, but they're also not going to get nothing. That's the give and take that we should expect in our politics and has been the norm. And I think it's what the voters of Wisconsin expect.
All right. Got time for one more. 2022, the results notwithstanding, because there's always results to be happy about. But what was it about this year with so many ugly ads and divisive campaigns? What was it about this year for you that was something that was positive or pleasant? I mean, you're doing something that you like doing, but it has to be because there was something there that makes it worthwhile. What was that for you?
I think that in the final analysis, we did see the people of this country get it right and start the long, hard work of turning back the influence of Trump in our politics. That is really rewarding for me. You know, I'm somebody who believes in the people of this country and that there is nothing we can't do when we put our mind to it. It's been a while since we sort of had a single unifying aim of national purpose. And that's okay. There's always been disagreements. That's part of the process. But the fact that you saw Trump-endorsed candidate after Trump-endorsed candidate after election-denying candidate turned back by the voters is another indication to me that although we don't always get it right, although we are not a perfect country, in the long sweep of history, we tend to get it right. That is what is important. That is what that eternal quest for a more perfect union is all about. We started to bend that curve back, and I think that's really important. And I'm certainly feeling hopeful and optimistic heading into 2023 that although the fight is not over, we're on the right track. People understand just what is at stake. They voted like it, and that's a good sign. That's a healthy sign.
That's Joe Zepecki. And again, our big thanks to Joe for visiting with us and talking about the midterms. I was encouraged by the notion that perhaps Evers and Republican legislative leaders can talk to each other and come to a deal.
I think if I took issue with anything, it's that, you know, our state's Republican congressional delegation are a bunch of backbenchers who aren't going to play a big role in these sham investigations coming up. That's actually how people get off the backbench, is by making some kind of a spectacle. And I would not be a bit surprised to see that from a member of our GOP delegation, especially if any are interested in challenging Tammy Baldwin, say, in 2024. When we come back, we're rejoined by Dr. Kristen Lyerly and her new weekly Hometown Health segment about how communities can work with each other to improve health all around town. That's coming up right after this break. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
So this is me fulfilling one of my New Year's resolutions a little early to not have to lean on Dr. Lyerly simply for stories about abortion care, women's health, things like that. The woman knows a thing or two about the healthcare system, about keeping people healthy, and she wanted to work on a weekly segment that we're going to call Hometown Health, about all the very many ways that a community can improve its health overall on an individual and community-wide basis.
Well, it's necessary on a community-wide basis, because that is what determines whether your water is safe to drink or is the air clean to breathe. There was a segment on public radio the other day about how bad the air is in Poland because of all the coal burning that they do. And over 40,000 people a year die because of their bad polluted air. We don't see that here, because we have safeguards in place. But I mean, that doesn't mean we can't get there if we aren't vigilant about our community health, which is why it's so important.
So there are groups that are dedicated to just that, including one called Wello. And Natalie Bomstad was our guest for this first segment. And so we want to listen a bit to Kristen's discussion with Natalie.
It is truly my pleasure, our pleasure, to welcome Executive Director of Wello, Natalie Bomstad, for our inaugural Hometown Health segment. Natalie, thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to join the program today.
Yeah, thank you.
And you know, the reason I picked Wello for our first segment is, well, it's centered in Brown County, and that's where I live. That's where we worked together for this amazing community, but within the context of this just outstanding organization that has a purpose that is, and I took this right off the website, to co-create community conditions that are fair and just, to drive high levels of health and well-being for all. There is so much jam-packed into that sentence of purpose. And the world has been crazy lately. And it's easy for us to get really mired in all of these contemporary problems that we're dealing with. But Wello gives us this opportunity to envision what tomorrow could look like, and to help us work towards making it a reality. So tell us, after I've been doing all this talking, Natalie, what is Wello?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lyerly. You are exactly right. Our purpose is to co-create community conditions that are fair and just, to drive high levels of health and well-being for all. And we were established in 2010 to really be kind of a backbone organization, as you will, to really help elevate and amplify the amazing things and people that are making this a reality in Brown County, but also to bring those people together and those organizations, and to build that trust and that foundational relationships, those foundational relationships that really allow health and well-being to become part of the fabric of our community, right? Mm-hmm. So when we think about what is that preferred future that we want, what's the future of for our kids and for our grandkids? What type of community is that? We all want, at some level, some similar things, and health and well-being, I believe is really one of those shared values. Mm-hmm. So at Wello, we are all about how can we really maximize each of our strengths, really maximize our assets, so that we're doing things in a very coordinated way that can help advance that for the community that we all live in.
Mm-hmm. And Wello's been around for about a decade, you said. How did this, I mean, this is something that is really visionary. How did this all come about and morph into this community building organization that we know today?
Absolutely. So there's always a great origin story for an organization. And the same, I think, is really true for Wello. In Brown County, we have a local newspaper called the Press Gazette. Mm-hmm. And in 2010, they actually released an editorial that asked people to think bold about what types of things in our community could we do collectively to really advance the greater good, to really improve that quality of life. And as you can imagine, they received all sorts of different things that we could do. But one of those things was really around how do we come together and support each other in this health and well-being journey. And so after that editorial really came out, and there were so many people who responded that, yes, we want to think about community health. We want to think about this future, how we're building collective well-being, that there was a number of different stakeholders that came together, said, wow, this is a really great kind of readiness that we have here in our community. And that's really how our organization was formed. So that's our origin story, is really, really comes from the community. And that's why we work so hard at Wello to make sure that everything that we do is community centered. Mm-hmm. How we're measuring resident well-being, how we're taking action and trying and testing little small innovations that can help lead to really big wins in our community. Everything is really centered on the community, because that's really where we got our roots and that's where we got started.
It's really exciting to know that this came kind of from a referendum that was put forth through the newspaper, not legislatively, but people sensed that there was a need. They used their voices, and here we are, 10 years later, with this incredible organization. I want to switch a little bit and pivot to one of your favorite analogies, which is curb cutting.
And absolutely. I know,
this is such a great story, because as a kid growing up in the 70s, trying to ride my bike, we'd hit a corner and you'd have to go over the curb or on your skates. And curbs are, they're big, they're hazards, but you don't see that so much anymore. And there's a reason for that. Tell us about it and how it relates to Wello.
Absolutely. So the question that we get oftentimes is, okay, so you're focused on community health and well-being. Well, that's really big. How do you do that? Right? And I think about if you asked someone, hey, come boil the ocean with me, right? Like some this really big task, people are going to look at you like, what are you talking about? But if you say, we have some water in this glass and we want you to help us figure out how we can boil this glass of water, right? It seems more tangible. It seems like we can actually achieve some wins. And that's really the approach that we take at Wello. So a curb cut is actually, was developed in the 70s, as you mentioned. There were individuals who were wheelchair bound and they were trying to access restaurants. They were trying to access the movie theater, go to their kids' schools, do the things that those of us who are able-bodied just take for granted, that we hop that curb and we go and we access these places around our community. They were not accessible for them. And so they actually started really this grassroots movement where at night they would actually put up these planks and they would, you know, zoom up these planks to showcase what needed to happen in order for them to access these spaces. And that movement really gained steam. And in 1971 in Berkeley, California, they actually implemented some new policies and practices that these spaces in our community need to have what's called a curb cut. So easily those who are wheelchair bound can access these places in our community. But also the spillover effects were practically immediate, right? You can think about if you are a parent or caregiver and you're trying to push your kids in a stroller, or you're pulling them in a wheelbarrow, or not a wheelbarrow, but you know, you're pulling them
too, though.
maybe in the UP. I might have been pulled in a wheelbarrow in the UP when I was growing up. So there is some context there. But people delivering packages to businesses, right? So there were, the idea of a curb cut is it is a targeted solution, but it has a broad benefit to the community. And so when we think about our work at Wello, we really think about the approach that we take, right? And it's really about taking an approach that is targeted, yet we know has these spillover effects. And, you know, when you really think about curb cuts, it's really an approach that can really center equity. It really creates innovation, and it's a better use of our limited resources because it's highly efficient.
So when we get to specifics then in, you know, where do we see Wello making a difference? And I'm looking, you know, through the website, wello.org right now, and I'm seeing things like over the summer, working with resource centers with a produce box grant project, for example. Yeah. And what else did I see here? Oh, you know, awarding mindfulness grants to Green Bay schools. So these are the tangible things that people can see that you're working on.
Absolutely. These are all examples of those curb cuts, right? So in our food systems work, we saw, you know, we were working with distribution to make sure food is actually getting to the people most in need. And we're working with resource centers. And what we were finding was if only they had a fridge, right? Mm-hmm. If only they had this one thing that would allow them to actually aggregate some of that food and distribute it to the people who are coming to their resource centers and in need and may not be eligible to access food distribution in some of those other areas like food pantries or different things based on their circumstances. Mindfulness in schools. We are hearing from the teachers, goodness, our teachers, the paraprofessionals that are in the schools, they are inundated with some of these things day in and day out. Students are coming with a lot of different things in terms of the spectrum of mental health. How can we make sure we're building capacity at that level, getting them the resources that they need to then therefore be better in the classroom? And so there's all these examples of, you know, yield to your neighbor is another one of our campaigns.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun one.
You can do, right? If you yield to your neighbor, we are more likely to decrease those crashes, increase accessibility to our spaces, make it more safer for everyone in our community. So it's these targeted things that lead to some big benefits in our community.
We call that one Frogger. Because it really is about teaching people to slow down in the crosswalks. And you wouldn't believe, I mean, Wello works with the Green Bay Police and a lot of other community partners just to help people, just to remind people, hey, you got to slow down so the pedestrians have safe places to walk.
And you also have something here called the Wellbeing Influencer Network. It says wellbeing starts with we and we need you. Influencer is a big hot term nowadays. What is it about becoming an influencer for well-being that can improve community health?
Exactly. Thank you for asking that question, Pat. It's everything about well-being is that interconnectedness, right? And we know that it takes people, right, coming together to do that. And so the Well-Being Influencer Network is really this recognition that there are things that each and every one of us can do each day, right? It's as small as once it snows out, right? Helping, you know, shovel out our neighbor if we can. It's holding the door for that person behind you. And not to forget how influential those small acts can be. It is the ripple effect. And so the Wellbeing Influencer Network is really an opportunity for people to get involved in their neighborhoods, in their communities. And Wello can really wrap around and provide those supports on, you know, funneling some of those fun ideas, ways that they can get connected to their community. But it really is about each of us coming together, linking arms together, and really creating a community that is, you know, really setting us up for success in the future.
Mm-hmm. And in the minute that we have left, let's talk briefly about some of the great things that Wello has on the horizon. I know Winter Mission is something we're talking a lot about right now. Take it away.
Absolutely. So we're really excited for this kind of this next season of our work. Winter Mission is all about connecting people and places for well-being. So again, really amplifying those things that we need. We're going to look at our snow removal policies, making it easier, more accessible for people to get around. And then looking into 2023, we have our annual summit coming up in February. So that's an opportunity for people to connect either in person or virtually to learn more and to get even more involved in the work.
Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today. And if anyone out there is interested in Wello's work, please check it out, Wello, WELLO.org. Become an influencer and join our community.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you so much.
Good work out of you.
Pat, I just am so grateful to you for this segment and for recognizing that health, these kinds of health-related organizations penetrate every fiber of our being. They are so necessary, and for giving us an opportunity to talk about them and to reach out to folks all across the state to share these beautiful little programs.
Well, there are just so many people active in so many positive ways around the state. I spent a lot of this past year lifting up the people that I referred to as democracy's little helpers. And, yes. But now we can do the same thing with public health, the people that are trying to, you know, improve an entire community. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do it with other voices in other areas that we can't talk about yet. But I'm so glad you were willing to kick off this kind of an initiative from us. And we're going to do much more in the coming year. Do you want to stick around and harass Luke Mathers with me?
I would love nothing more.
Okay. Take a break and see what else is happening around the civic media empire coming up in just a couple of minutes on Up North News Radio. Well, this is normally where we hear from Luke and Brian, but I'll just play some Luke Brian instead. Close circuit to Luke, who I'm sure is listening in traffic in Madison someplace. Yes, we did say it was going to be weekly. It was not a one-off. Remember, he had to call in. Remember, Aaron, he had to call in last week because he was, quote unquote, stuck in traffic.
Oh, mm-hmm. I remember. Mm-hmm. Oh, we might have another one of those.
He's going to walk in that door in the next few minutes, and he's just going to give you this look like, what did he say? What? Mm-hmm. Now you know. All right. That's fine. I'll vamp. I got sports to talk about. Giannis scored 35 points. Drew Holiday added 31. The Bucks beat Sacramento 126-113. They play tomorrow night in Dallas, 9 p.m. on ESPN. And, Kristen, I'm sure you will be watching volleyball later today as the Badgers take on Penn State.
Yes.
Later today at the Fieldhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Marquette will be playing the University of Texas in Austin this afternoon. Both are in the round of 16, hoping to qualify for the round of 8. And I have to admit, I am still, because I still see the clip getting passed around, I'm still in awe of the woman from, where was it, Houston, mm-hmm. diving over the table to make that save the other day. It's such an advertisement for volleyball itself. It's kind of like there was a NASCAR race, oh gosh, 30 years ago now, where there was a fight in the pits, and people credit that with, like, that was the moment more people wanted to watch NASCAR because it wasn't just cars going around in a circle. There was like some real action. I think maybe people are being critical of, you know, why was there a table out there where somebody could, I think we need more of that. Let's put more furniture around the volleyball court.
They're going to change the rules now. But, you know, really, volleyball is a high action. Like, I have a hard time watching soccer and hockey because there's not a lot of stuff happening. You know, it's a lot of back and forth. But volleyball is constant. It's like watching a basketball game. It's thrilling.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I forget, we talked so much about you being the mascot of Goldie Gopher that I don't recall asking if you actually did any sports in high school or college.
I'm very uncoordinated, but I am an excellent athletic supporter.
Athletic supporter. Let's see. Maybe but I can add that to my resume.
Now leave it alone, Erin. She just baits us. She's a master at baiting us. You bike now a lot. Were you late to that? Was that an injury thing? Because now you love biking.
I've always ridden my bike, but I didn't get serious about it. And I'm not like a racer or anything But when I went to medical school and I had little kids and I just needed a little time to get away and be able to think and get some fresh air, that was really when I started. Like, I would sneak away for 30 minutes here. And then I trained for a century, and that was an incredible journey. And then I was hooked on it, and I had more time as the kids got older. So now I try to ride whenever I can. And it, to me, is my happy place where I can just clear my mind, and I always come back feeling great.
You know, you glossed right over it, but I'm going to bring it right back to, I had to get away from the damn kids. I just had to get away from the kids. And I know other moms heard that just now and said, amen, sister. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, I know.
I love my kids, but I mean, come on, let's be realistic. Like, we're people. And as moms, we have to support each other in that. You need your time away. And that's why we need a community. Like, they say it takes a village. It really takes a village. You've got to hand it off sometimes so that you can find that place where you feel whole.
You know, if I would have had the extra time and known we were going to be using the segment for this, I would have had Aaron cue up some more Schoolhouse Rock tunes. Did you hear that the last living member of the creative team passed away?
Oh, I didn't.
George Newell was 88 years old, last surviving member of the team that gave us Schoolhouse Rock, I'm Just a Bill, Three is a Magic Number.
Conjunction, Junction, What's Your Function?
Unpack Your Adjectives. I love Interjection.
Oh, interjection.
You could almost use, swear words because you were learning what interjections were.
Ouch. Wow. Yes, I love that. Were you one of the nerdy kids who was like, when they would put Schoolhouse Rock on Saturday morning, because that was the only time that there were cartoons, that you were like, you didn't actually care about the programming. You just wanted the Schoolhouse Rock part.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I love that.
I loved Unpack Your Adjectives. For whatever reason, sometimes one of the lines will still come out, wow, that was one big ugly bear or something like that with all the adjectives that went along.
Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here.
Yes.
You're just like, what a wonderful walk down memory lane we're doing right now, Pat.
Well, they were just, I mean, useful, We kind of talked about this with Sesame Street, where people, again, around that same time were saying, do we have to just have garbage, for TV programming? Can we maybe teach a thing or two? And, so now we have Sesame Street, where we said farewell to Bob a few days ago. And now the last surviving member of the Schoolhouse Rock kids, I shouldn't say kids, creators are on their way.
It's still there. I mean, that Schoolhouse Rock, Sesame Street kind of educational component is still there for the generations that are younger now. I mean, my 14-year-old was telling me about how he screens for testicular cancer because he learned about that on TikTok. And I thought, brilliant. I know that we didn't have a Schoolhouse Rock on that one.
Maybe that's what we need you to do, a Schoolhouse Rock on various health matters.
We could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We could do that.
So I'm reading more about Mr. Newell here. And I mentioned in the last hour that he was a creative director at an ad agency. This is the guy, again, I'm really dating myself. It says here in the New York Times, he's the one who conjured up the High Karate brand of men's toiletries for Pfizer with an advertising campaign that parodied the industry's customary romanticized appeal to raw sexual passion by including self-defense instructions to fend off libidinous women. How often do you get to use the word libidinous? See, I can only do it once with this head cold.
You just get one and then you're done.
You need a bit like that, Aaron, that you can just inject every once in a while. Libidinous women.
Libidinous, yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to write that down. I'm working on getting sound effects together and stuff, so.
And remember, the whole reason we have Sex Panther from the movie Anchorman is that it was a takeoff of the High Karate commercials that I'd entirely forgotten about. They were so over the top.
That's so perfect. That's so Will Ferrell.
Oh my gosh, yes.
By the way, if you haven't seen Spirited, please do.
It's a good advice for everybody else. Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, my kids weren't thrilled to see that it was a musical. They were expecting something more like Elf, but once you get that it's going to be a musical, you're good. Mm-hmm. Folks will really enjoy it. So yeah, do see that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks. You're not as cute as Luke, but thanks for filling in anyway, Kristen. We appreciate it. You're a good pinch hitter.
I do what I can.
All right. You have a great day. We'll talk to you a little bit later. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Let's see if I get the roster right here. We've got Todd Alba coming up next. Yes, that's right. Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Stephanie Miller in Madison. The rest of you have a great Thursday. We'll see you to wrap up the week tomorrow. Voice willing, of course.
60% of the time, it works every time.
Yeah.